Please be seated. Well, we've all survived the fire drill, right? It still makes me jump, even though I know when it's going to go on. So that is out of the way. Now, we have a couple of other preliminary matters before we begin our argument this morning. My notes tell me that the students from Germantown High School are here. If that's the case, would they please stand along with their advisors or sponsors? Oh, wow, big group, wonderful. Thank you, please be seated. The students are here in a program called Court with Class, and they've received some preliminary information about the case that's to be argued. If you all can stay after we conclude the argument, Justice Shirley Abrahamson will come out and talk with you a little bit about procedures within the court. So you can let our marshal know, and then she will let the justice know whether you're going to be here after that. Before we begin, I'd like to introduce the court to the students. On my far right, Justice Rebecca Bradley. Next to her, Justice Elise Stiegler. Next to me is Justice Shirley Abrahamson. I am Pat Rogensack, the Chief Justice. On my left, Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. On her left, Justice Michael Gableman. And on the end of the bench, Justice Daniel Kelly. So with those introductions and, as I said, with the fire alarm safely out of the way, are you ready to begin, counsel?
Yes, sir.
Okay, please do.
Well, first of all, it's a great honor and a great pleasure to be here in front of this court. Really a wonderful thing to have as an attorney to be able to appear here. But this case and all of the work went into it is much more than something that comes to the office is here in the front row, and I would particularly like to thank Caitlin Doyle, a first-year law student, and Sarah Clapp, a summer intern and a continuing intern who's applying to the UW, who both helped immeasurably with the hard work and research of writing this brief. With that, this case examines the interplay between eminent domain law and special assessment law. In this case, the city of Osh, in the first phase of this case, which was the eminent domain phase, the city of Oshkosh took part of CED's land to build a roundabout and paid CED just compensation. The taking removed the corner of CED's lot. It left the drive-through lane exposed and made the building non-conforming. Where there used to be grass and landscaping, the city placed the sidewalk, curb, and gutter to accommodate the new configuration of the roundabout. Now, sometimes public projects give a special benefit to a property. A special benefit is when a property benefits in some important way from a public improvement. A special benefit has the effect of furnishing an uncommon advantage to a property. An uncommon advantage is one that differs in kind rather than degree from the benefits enjoyed by the general public. That's almost essentially paragraph 25 of the MJ. Now, if there's not a taking from a property in a different hypothetical case, then the city may bill for that special benefit, provided that there is a caveat that an assessment in substantial excess of the special benefit is itself an unconstitutional taking. And that's the Creamery's case and Norwood v. Baker. Special assessment in substantial excess, special benefit, is itself an unconstitutional taking.
Counsel, do we have to first determine whether special benefit means the same thing in both chapters 32 and 66?
Well, possibly. If it does mean the same thing in chapter 66 as it means in chapter 32, then the city loses and cannot prevail.
And is that because they're judicially estopped in the tax proceedings from asserting that there's a special benefit when they said there was not one in the condemnation proceedings?
Well, judicial estoppel would be an interesting theory, and it might work. Certainly, in the eminent domain proceeding, we deposed the city and asked their expert point blank, is there a special benefit? And he said he didn't believe so. He said, in his report, he said no special benefit. And later they came back and say there's a special benefit. So that could be a sort of a judicial estoppel argument. But there's another thing, and that is 32.09 sub 3 of the Wisconsin statutes. And 32.09 sub 3 of the Wisconsin statutes said that special benefits must be brought up during the eminent domain case and used to offset the amount of compensation paid. I quote, special benefits accruing to the property and affecting its market value because of the planned public improvement shall be considered and used to offset the value taken or damages. So the definition of special assessment in the eminent domain cases, which is also PETCAS, HEPAS, which are both often cited to in the canon of special assessment cases, such as Berkvam, which is sometimes called the storm sewers case, which is this court's opinion, that definition says in order for there to be a special
You have
benefit,
to stand before, in front of the microphone in order to be recorded. So
oh, thank you very much, Justice. The definition in the eminent domain cases says that in order for there to be a special benefit, there must be at least some increase in the property value. If there is some increase in the property value, then the mandate of 32.09 sub 3 is triggered, and that special benefit has to be brought up.
Well, let's say that the city does not bring it up in the condemnation proceedings, but then they assert it in the special assessment proceedings. Why does that, aside from a procedural question, why does that matter? If you're still looking at whether a special benefit exists and whether the property owner has an obligation to either pay for it or have to accept a reduced compensation for the takings, why does it matter?
Aside from the procedural problem, which is a big one, there's a fairness issue. There's a fairness issue. Condemnation has often been referred to as a harsh right. Somebody has some property, the public is taking it because it needs it, and it's hard on that person or that business often, but having to endure two legal proceedings makes it even harder. And when the second legal proceeding, with all due respect to this court, involves an area of law so murky as this special assessment area of the law, it's really unfair. If the public needs that property from the person, whether it's a family or a business or a farm, then the least that the public can do is put all the cards on the table at once and say, this is how much we think we owe you, but we think you may be getting a benefit from this project as well. So we want to discuss it all at one time and work it out in one proceeding. And quite frankly, the easiest and most straightforward and most common sense way to read 32.09 sub 3 is that that is exactly what the legislature intended.
But, you know, the special benefit that is in Chapter 32 and that you rely on in your brief is qualified because the statute says under sub 3, special benefits accruing to the property and affecting its market value because of the planned public improvement. Now, isn't it possible to have a special benefit to a property that doesn't increase the market value of the property?
Well, that's an interesting question. A special benefit is defined as an uncommon advantage that differs in kind rather than in degree from benefits enjoyed by the general public. So if there was such a thing as a special benefit that was this great benefit to the property that didn't even raise its value by 1 cent, nothing, kept it absolutely neutral, then that sort of a special benefit would evade the mandate of 32.09 sub 3 because it would be a special benefit of zero value. I think the reason that qualifying language is in 32.09 sub 3 is that there are special benefits, okay, that may be special assessed for. And there are also services that may be special charged for. The special charges and the special benefits and special assessments used to all be lumped together in the same statute, which was 66.60. Later, that was revised, and the special charges were moved to section 66.0627, and the special assessments remained in 66.0307, I think. But that's discussed at length in the brief. So I think the reason that this was qualified this way is that we have some case law, which is, among others, Duncan, Genrich, and First Bank v. Omro, that say that a special benefit can either be an enhancement of the property's value, can be proven by an enhancement of the property's value, or, in Duncan, what was termed an increase in service. And then in Genrich, it was an increase in services, and I think in First Bank, it was increased services. I think that, in fairness, what this statute is saying is that the special charges actually don't have to be brought up in the eminent domain proceeding. The things under 66.0627 can be brought up at a different time, but a special benefit, it's unusual, to say the least, that an uncommon advantage that differs in kind rather than degree from the benefits enjoyed by the general public, particularly for a commercial property, could have zero impact on the value, either positive or negative. A completely neutral impact that nevertheless constitutes an uncommon advantage that differs in kind rather than degree from the benefits is rare. And even if it could exist, we run into huge problems in the workability, because we know that a special assessment in substantial excess is an unconstitutional taking. So in substantial excess of zero, where does that leave us?
Well, and that was my question. It seems to me, from all the cases that I've read that you both have cited, that there's no case that says in order to have a special benefit, you must have an increase in market value. I haven't found that case.
Actually, Your Honor, with all due respect,
that says exactly that?
All of the cases that cite the eminent domain definition, mm-hmm. which is many of them,
right.
Storm sewers,
right, right.
cites to it, all say there needs to be an increase in value, and that if we look at all the cites to McQuillan, which we have in our brief, McQuillan across the board says an increase in value.
It depends upon what the special assessment is made for. Yes, special assessments for sidewalks. And you don't even get to challenge sidewalks.
Oh, you do get to challenge sidewalks. With all due respect, Your Honor, oh. Look at the Cherokee Platt case. In the Cherokee Platt case, they challenged the sidewalks because they said where the sidewalks were made was going to cause a lot of problems. They were going to have to make retaining walls and some other things.
Okay, I'm talking about challenging them as a special benefit, whether they were a special benefit or not a special benefit.
Well, sidewalks are a very anomalous situation. I think that the Cherokee Platt case shows that if a sidewalk is actually a detriment, that the landowner may be able to challenge it. There's a provision for repair of sidewalks mm-hmm. under 66.0627, which is a special charge. But at any rate, in this case...
Right, we're not talking about that anyway. We're talking about the roundabout.
Huh?
We're talking about the roundabout, not
okay,
the sidewalk.
Okay, right. And so in this case, if you look at the schedule of assessments, which I actually have... The schedule clearly shows that the actual amount for sidewalk rehab in this case was minimal. Yeah, I think it was $81 for one side, and perhaps it was $81 for one side and $352 and change for the other. So even if we were to leave the sidewalks out of this, which perhaps is the way to go, and to say sidewalks are their own strange world, I would say two things. First of all, the sidewalk money in this is minimal. It's $352.81. And I don't think any of the case law suggests that a sidewalk issue can bootstrap all the rest of it. So that's one thing.
Okay. I don't want to get you off your main argument, and I think my questions did exactly that. I'm very interested in the arguments you made and opposing counsel made about whether or not this is actually a local improvement or whether this is for general use because it's a roundabout and it's in the intersection of two highways, one a state highway, one a U.S. highway. And the fact that we're here on summary judgment, You know, I read your expert's report, and certainly he has terrific qualifications and was very particularized, and there's argument on the other side that goes the other direction. So do you want us to make any kind of determination about whether this is really an assessment for a local benefit rather than a general benefit, or do you want that remanded?
Well, I think that I think if that's how this case would be decided, with all due respect, I think that would have to be remanded, unless the finding would be that we had made a prima facie case for the improvement not being local. The city, remember, is not allowed, once we put in a prima facie case, is not allowed to rely on the record. And the city did not put in rebutting affidavits saying that it was local as opposed to general. So we have our expert saying, hey, this is not local. It's U.S. Highway 45 and State Highway 76. It's greatly used by the general public. It's not primarily for the benefit of the local properties. We have other facts showing it's not primarily for the benefit of the local properties, such as the effect on this property, which was deleterious, to say the least. Yeah. And so this court could say, well, somehow the Circuit Court and Court of Appeals didn't address the local issue. CED did put in a prima facie case for summary judgment in the form of a properly sworn out affidavit and an expert opinion. The city had its record, but it didn't put in its own evidentiary facts, and so we have summary judgment that way. This court could also find that way on the special benefit issue, possibly, because we have an expert affidavit explaining why there were no special benefits, and they relied on that.
Okay. All right. But you do agree that there are issues here that are factual issues, and we're here on summary judgment. But you think what you put in is sufficient?
Well, we put in, Your Honor, a sufficient, certainly a sufficient amount of evidentiary facts to avoid summary judgment being granted against us. There's a question whether any of the facts that the city put in were evidentiary in nature, because what they did was they simply put in the affidavit of Mr. Godi, I'm not sure how his name is pronounced, but at any rate, it was Mr. The affidavit that had attached to it all of the proceedings and the report, which are, you know, there's a real question whether that's evidentiary. And I think it's Cherokee, it is the Cherokee Platt case, which says the city can't simply rely on the record that it created. Once the case starts, it goes by the same rules of summary judgment of everybody else, and it has to have opposing affidavits. So,
is the city entitled to a presumption that the special assessment was correct?
Definitely. And that's why Park Avenue Plaza lost, because the city got its presumption. Park Avenue Plaza didn't put in any affidavits or any evidentiary facts and just tried to say, well, we can disagree with things and tease out some facts in the city's report that might go either way, and that's not enough. That's what Park Avenue Plaza said. The counterpart to that is Genrich, Cherokee Platt, and the whole variety of cases where the landowner put in some evidence, often much of a much less caliber than us, like a realtor's affidavit or something else, and avoided summary judgment. So how we took summary judgment against us is...
Did you have to rebut the presumption of correctness?
We did have to, Your Honor, and we did.
You
did.
That with our, and how did you do that?
Well, we had the affidavit of a highly qualified expert who was a litigation coordinator for the Department of Transportation for 19 years, who was a real estate expert there, who was a certified general appraiser in the state of Wisconsin, and he explained using, in his affidavit, that there was no special benefit to the property, and that it was not a local project. And moreover, we submitted my affidavit with pages from the deposition of the city's expert, where the city's expert said point blank, there is no special benefit to the best of his belief, or something very similar to that. What did he say? He said, I said, okay, in your appraisal here, did you find any special benefits to the subject property? He said, no. I said, okay, are there any special benefits to the property in this case? He said, I don't believe so. So I would think that that, along with...
Excuse me, that was testimony given in the condemnation proceedings, correct?
It was, Your Honor.
Okay, so all right, I just want to be sure that we're clear on what we're talking about.
Well, there was no testimony in the... and that's why... thank you for that clarification. I did say those were pages from the deposition
right.
of the expert, and
right.
There was no testimony. We never got any testimony because we had the summary judgment. So I would think the testimony of the city's expert on the same project in the condemnation case, coupled with the city's expert's report in the condemnation case that said no special benefits, coupled with the affidavit of our expert in this case, sworn out for this case, saying that there was no special benefit and that the project was not local, and appending to it and incorporating in his report from the prior case and explaining this project actually damaged the CED property, I think that would get us past summary judgment. But even if it wouldn't, there's two other things that should have gotten us past summary judgment.
Before you go there, Counsel, were the taxing and condemning authorities the same?
They were.
Okay.
There are two other things that should have gotten us past summary judgment. The first was that a special assessment in substantial excess of the special benefit is a taking. Here the special assessment is $40,000 for a benefit that the city says is worth exactly zero. That should have gotten us at least to some kind of a hearing on whether or not this could possibly be legitimate to special assess $40,000 for something that is admittedly, in the city's view, of zero value, zero property.
Council, are there any circumstances under which installing sidewalks and resurfacing a road can support a special assessment?
Many situations. When it's a local project, when it benefits the property, or under the special charges statute, I think there's many situations where the city can perfectly, appropriately assess for sidewalks and streets.
So here they can't. Your position is they can't because it's not a local benefit.
Here they can't because of a whole variety of reasons. But even if they had brought it up in the eminent domain case and said, well, we are hurting your property in this way, but we're putting in a new sidewalk, and that's going to benefit your property to the tune of however much, that would have been perfectly within their rights. Everything that they're saying is a special benefit now, their appraiser considered during the eminent domain case. He passed on that. He said, okay, there's going to be a new sidewalk, there's going to be landscaping out in the middle, they're going to take the landscaping away from over here, but they're going to put landscaping in over there. He could have said that putting the landscaping in the middle partially mitigates the damages of taking away the landscaping around the drive-thru. He could have said that the putting in the new sidewalk mitigates the upcoming repair work that this property would certainly, you know, the sidewalks were fine, actually, but, you know, the $300 or whatever that would have had to be done. That could have been brought up during the eminent domain case. It would have complied with 32.09 sub 3. It would have made everything square. And, in fact, there was a section in the city's appraiser's report entitled Special Benefits.
Counsel, you raise another issue in your brief that I want you to have an opportunity to address, and that's your contention that the apportionment of the costs of this project was not reasonably made among those people subjected to an assessment for it. Would you give us your best argument on that, please?
And what I would like to do is show this map, which is...
just 1 second. You had a chance to see this, Council?
It's in the record.
Just a minute. Is it in your briefs, Council?
It's fine.
It's the map from your affidavit of authority.
Do you have any objection to its use?
Yeah, it's the before.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much. Counsel, you may proceed.
It's in the record. Is it in the brief?
It is. This is page, I'm showing to the court page 31
of the affidavit of Mr. Godey, which is record 7. So it's actually page 34 of record 7 because there were some other pages on the affidavit. And what we can see from this map is that down where the city labeled these large numbers in the north, this is the before condition of the project, we see the subject property, CED. And CED was special assessed $40,000. Up here, the 1863 is McDonald's, also with a drive-through. We can see with our own eyes, not very different sized properties. Only special assessed $4,400. Dairy Queen down on Murdoch at the 510 West Murdoch, only assessed $2,900. And the mall, as I've noted in our brief, was assessed $54,000. And the reason that the, Starbucks at 210 West Murdoch, over here, also a drive-through facility, was assessed $17,000. So there's a problem with the proportionality because the front foot method was used. And in the city's brief, there's a lot of discussion about the traffic count and trip generation. And I want to make two very brief points here. First of all, traffic count and trip generation were not used. That, at best, it's a post hoc rationalization for why this might make sense. They were not used. Second of all, if the traffic count had been used, common sense dictates that the other drive-through establishments would have paid more their fair share. And lastly, I would submit to you that trip generation and traffic count are two very different things. Taco Bell, this property is built out for a Taco Bell restaurant. That is what is called an impulse stop. That means that the people that are driving by, some of them stop and go into the Taco Bell and then come back out. That counts as two trips. There's nothing in this case that would indicate that, for example, if the Taco Bell went away, that the traffic count on those roads would drop down from 25,000 because people are driving there anyway. The project took out the Kentucky Fried Chicken across the street. We didn't see the traffic count go down because people are driving on U.S. Highway 41 and they're driving on State Highway 76 to go places. And while they're going there, they sometimes get hungry for tacos or Kentucky Fried Chicken or whatever, or they go to the mall. And when they go to the mall, they suddenly get the impulse to go over to Taco Bell, and that's why it's called an impulse stop. So trip generation wasn't used. It's a tremendous red herring in this case. If it had been properly used, that probably would have been quite possibly a better way to do things, to figure out maybe, but it's not even a local project anyway, so we're off in the stratosphere of angels dancing on the heads of pins. Trip generation can be a very good way to do things in certain local situations where it's a fair way of apportioning things. The front foot method can be a very fair way to do things. But like in the Peterson case where you had the pie-shaped lot, we basically have a pie-shaped lot here. The CED property is on the corner. And it got assessed $40,000, whereas Starbucks, right down the way, that we can see with our own two eyes is the same size, got assessed $17,000.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you very much. Please, you may proceed.
May it please the court, Richard Carlson on behalf of the City of Oshkosh. I'm happy to report to you that there is order, logic, clarity, and consistency in special assessment law. Not a hair on fire proposition here. Special assessment law has been on the books now since 1945. It has been a useful tool on the part of municipalities. It's been liked by property owners as well as municipalities. And it was instrumental in helping with the post-war boom that we saw in Wisconsin and the development. So I wanted to start with that. First of all, the city condemned 2,799 feet of the Taco Bell lot. It had 39,000 square feet left over. The city paid $180,000. Any detriment that was caused by this small taking, CED, was compensated. well compensated.
Counsel, now, why did the, if there are special benefits that accrued to the CED property, why did the city not assert that in the condemnation proceedings?
Let me give you some background on that. Generally speaking, if a public works project requires a taking, it is because there is a public improvement that is now available, being made available that wasn't previously available. And by the fact that that public improvement is now available, it increases the market value of the property. Before the improvement's even in, just if you look at Chapter 3209, Sub 3, it just talks even about a planned improvement. If you look at the Red Top case, just by virtue of the fact that there had been a condemnation that was going to provide another road to the Red Top Farms, that property increased in value.
Okay, so, Council, there was a road there before. There was an intersection. There were sidewalks. There were gutters. There was storm sewers, so on and so forth. So in your brief at page 12, you say an accessible special benefit from a local improvement must have the effect of furnishing an uncommon advantage that either increases the services provided to the property or enhances its value. What is the uncommon advantage to having a roundabout as opposed to whatever form of controlled intersection there was there before?
Well, I'll get to that if I can just finish my analysis with respect to why we did not believe that the Taco Bell property increased in value. Unlike a project where sewers or some sort of service is now been made available, all the improvements around the Taco Bell property had already existed. What the project was about was replacing those. It was a reconstruction. So, I mean, Taco Bell had a concrete street before, it had curb and gutter, it had a sidewalk. This was a reconstruction because those improvements were old and tired, cracks, slabs, sinking, whatnot, and the city had decided to that it needed to be reconstructed. These things only have a life of about 50 years.
Right. So is
there wasn't market value because the stuff was already there.
Yeah. So yes. So is repair always an uncommon advantage?
Is reconstruction always an uncommon advantage?
Yes.
In this case, it is.
Why in this case and not in others?
Well, I can't think of anyone where it wouldn't be.
Okay, so it's always an uncommon advantage.
Well, I think the Marquette Law Review article said it pretty well, recognizing that special assessments require a special benefit. This is what was said in the Marquette Law Review. Traditionally, sewer and water mains, sidewalks, street paving, curbs, gutters, and other physical improvements abutting real properties are funded by special assessments. Although these improvements are located on public ways or municipal easements, the abutting properties enjoy the principal usage. Let me give you an example. You own a piece of, you own a house that's on a street that public sewer is not available. Public sewer becomes available. Your house is going to increase in value. Let's say you live on a street, your house is on a street that's got an 80-year-old sewer pipe, and it needs replacement. And it's going to cost $6,000 or $8,000 for each house to get replaced. That's not going to increase the value of your house.
That's what? I'm sorry?
That's not going to increase the value of your house.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's why I think the CED property stacks up as well.
I know. So you've gotten back around to Ipsy Dixit, though. So why is a repair of an existing facility an uncommon advantage?
A reconstruction.
Yes.
A repair, a reconstruction.
A reconstruction. Why is that?
They have new utility connections. These are more reliable. They're going to be more safe. They've got a new street. They don't have it sinking. It's going to drain better. There's going to be a redoing of the grade, elevations. It's going to be better modified and renewed in connection with exactly what the development is there now as opposed to 50 years ago.
And so why is that a local benefit to CED rather than a general benefit to the traveling public?
There is not any benefit to the public with respect to a sidewalk in front of CED, with respect to driveway aprons for CED, with respect to a utility connection for CED. There is no public benefit to that at all.
There's no public benefit to a sidewalk on public
property? No, to the general public.
Right.
It's
so there's,
obviously,
so there,
I mean, they can clean it easier. It's going to look better. It's going to...
Wait. Council?
Pardon?
So the sidewalk is on public property.
Yes.
And reconstructing the sidewalk on public property has no benefit to the public?
The general
public. Right.
The general public.
Yeah, the general public. Whoever wants to walk around...
community-wide.
Council, please.
Yeah.
To the general public, whoever happens to want to walk on that property, on that sidewalk, whether they're going to the mall or Starbucks or just going for an afternoon constitutional, why is that not a benefit to the general public, just as much, if not more so, than to CED?
Well, it's going to be a benefit, obviously, more of the people in the area that's being assessed. They're going to Taco Bell. They're going to Dairy Queen.
All right.
They're
so
the ones that are primarily using it.
Yep. So let's look at that. If that is the case, if that is what constitutes the special benefit to CED, shouldn't we see that reflected in increased value of CED's property? Keeping in mind that this is a commercial property, and the only value it has is the revenue that it generates.
It had a sidewalk before.
Yes.
And now it's got a new sidewalk.
Yes. And so if that's a special
benefit,
Council, please. If that's a special benefit to CED, shouldn't we see that new sidewalk providing whatever special benefit it does lead to an increase in trips to CED? And wouldn't that follow through to an increase in the property because it's a commercial property that drives all of its benefits from the revenue that it generates?
I don't see how the sidewalk would help. It would create more car traffic.
Right.
CED's
so part. Isn't that kind of CED's point?
I mean, the sidewalk is a new sidewalk. It's going to be all level. It's going to be easy to clean for us. I mean, there's a benefit. And that benefit doesn't necessarily have to increase the market value.
Is this CED's property, the sidewalk?
No.
Okay.
It's in the right-of-way.
What was the primary purpose for this reconstruction?
The primary purpose was that the old the intersection was old. The city had reconstructed Jackson Street several years earlier on the north side of it and the south side of it, and the intersection was left for a later time. The intersection design was changed to a roundabout because the roundabout is more efficient. I want to address this right away, right out the gate. We do believe that there's a special benefit by this roundabout intersection. We did not, Mr. Olson is correct, we did not assess specifically for the special benefits of it being more efficient. We did it on a front foot basis. The assessment was based on curb, gutter, sewer connections, driveway. We did not, but we still think that there was a special benefit, and that special benefit can be acknowledged in the final resolution.
Well, he's got an affidavit that was submitted in opposition to your presumption from an expert that says there's absolutely no special benefit. In fact, a roundabout is detrimental to Taco Bell.
That expert...
You may not think he's good or not good, but we're here on summary judgment, so I have to rely on what the record says.
There is no foundation at all that he knows anything about the fast food business and whether or not Taco Bell is surviving on impulse buying. There is no foundation of that at all. Part of his expert's opinion is that the public doesn't like roundabouts, that the roundabout here was not engineered properly. It wasn't large enough. I mean, this guy was going to give you an opinion about everything, maybe a weather forecast, and there is no foundation of any expertise in any of that stuff.
Did you make that objection in your response to summary in your responsive material in the summary judgment proceedings?
In my response to their summary judgment, I believe I did.
You objected that the material...
I didn't object. I just argued that there was no foundation.
You didn't move to have that part of the affidavit struck?
No.
Okay.
I thought it was pretty obvious, right, that this guy was given an opinion on everything. I mean, just common sense, common knowledge. You generally don't go to fast food places just on impulse. It's a planned trip. With respect to local and community, let me address that a little bit, too. This assessment area includes Taco Bell, Dairy Queen, Walgreens, a pizza, a national pizza thing, I don't know, Domino's or something like that, a food store, Starbucks, two strip malls. CED, the Taco Bell alone generates about 2,000 trips a day. The intersection itself, the total on all four legs of the intersection is 25,000. So you add up all the trips of these establishments in the special assessment area, and you've got the majority of the 25,000. The congestion is not from through traffic. The congestion is from the property owners in and around or within the special assessment area.
Right, so putting the roundabout in, isn't that a benefit to the general traveling public so they don't have to put up with the congestion?
Yeah, I would say that there is a benefit, but if you look at the Mulbrick case and the Park Plaza case, the court said, well, you can have a special benefit and you can also have some community benefits too. And we think that the benefit that's derived by this roundabout is very similar to the benefit that was acknowledged and accepted by this court in Mulbrick and the Court of Appeals in Park Plaza.
Should we, does that get weighed against any potential detriment of having increased, or I'm sorry, decreased congestion at that intersection?
I don't know if I followed the question.
Sure. So CED says, look, we like congestion. It makes people sit there at the intersection and look at our restaurant. And the more they look at our restaurant, the hungrier they get. And the more likelier that they'll come in. Seems reasonable.
I don't think you can put any municipality in a position that before they undertake a significant public improvement project that they've got to review the impact on each one. Let's say that there is more impulse buying for a taco than there is for a Starbucks.
Sure, but
I don't know if that's true, but I don't think you should put the municipalities in a position that they've got to do an impact statement for each and every type of establishment in the special assessment area. I mean, I just think
right.
You have to look at it kind of as a whole.
So certainly not before they do the project, right? But when you're doing the special assessment, aren't we kind of actually requiring that you do an impact so you can equitably assess each of the properties that get a special benefit?
I think I can answer that question best, and I think this would hopefully also unwind some of the confusion that CED has created here. There are two types of special assessments. One is the police power assessment, and one is a tax assessment. Using the taxing power. The taxing power to special assess using the taxing power The improvement has to increase the market value of the property. And that's why, and under a police power special assessment, the improvement has to increase services or increase the market value of the property. The police power does not have to increase the market value of the property. And so really, when you look at 3209, it's really saying market value, and it's really basically a bookend to special assessment under, or special assessment with the taxing power. And the reason the court has developed special assessments on the police power is because a lot of the reconstruction of public improvements, you cannot establish with any degree of certainty that a particular property is going to increase in value.
What's your best answer to Judge Gundrum's dissent?
My answer is what the concurring judge said. It doesn't make any difference. This was an assessment of
That's
sidewalks,
Judge,
curbs, and gutters.
That was Neubauer. Judge Neubauer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
It doesn't make any difference whether there's impulse buying or whatever. It's here, this guy's got new sidewalks, new street, new utility connections, landscaping, and whatnot. Whether or not their expert thinks that the roundabout was terrible or impulse buying, it doesn't make any difference. And I think probably the majority sort of said the same thing, and that's basically what the circuit court said as well.
Well, but there was a concern about whether there were factual issues here in regard to the dissent, correct?
Well, like I said, I don't think the factual issues make any difference, whether he said it's impulse buying.
Okay, whether it's a local improvement or a general improvement
is
a question of fact, correct?
Correct,
okay.
And that is important.
Okay. So I think that was some of his concern, that there were outstanding, important factual issues.
I don't know.
Okay.
What about the issue of the qualifications of the expert? You poo-poo those qualifications, to use a tried and true legal term. But did the circuit court perform a gatekeeping function vis-a-vis the qualifications of this witness? And if not, should it be remanded for that gatekeeping function?
If you're going to ask my opinion, I thought the circuit court kind of gave short shrift to it. If you ask my opinion, I don't think it made a difference, because the design of the roundabout, to me, whether it was more beneficial or status quo or whatever, it's the improvements. It's the nitty-gritty improvements that sustains this assessment, regardless of the design of the roundabout. It's a typical special assessment that has been going on for 70 years in Wisconsin. It's typical in the sense of what is being assessed, typical in the sense of how it's being assessed, and the most remarkable thing about it is that it's unremarkable. And that the other stuff is just kind of a layer of fog that goes over the
Council, maybe perhaps then the the way to get to the heart of the matter is, let's say we just take the roundabout out of this and just say the city repaved the intersection. Is that special assessable?
Repaving?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the city does repaving. I think a lot of cities do. When you say repaving, more than a reconstruction?
I don't know. You see the big, massive asphalt machines that chews up at one end and it lays down new pavement at the other end. Special assessment? Yeah,
that's generally reconstruction, and it's generally specially assessed.
All right. So any time that it happens, you go down 45 or whatever other street, that happens, that gets special assessed?
Mostly in municipalities. Towns have the ability to special assess, but towns, at least in the old line town roads, like the stuff that was laid out in the late 1800s, early 1900s, they don't. They'll usually, if they have to, special assess subdivision. And then they consider the other part of their backbone roads. But that varies, too.
When you say consider it part, just for clarification, part of your backbone roads, you're talking about, they consider it just the normal repair and maintenance of roads? Is that what you're saying?
No, they.
Sorry.
It's usually only the reconstruction that's specially assessed. And maybe I could clarify a little bit too. Mr. Olson's talking about special charge, sewer service charges, and whatnot. Special assessment is good because it covers significant public improvements. These are capital improvements. They're payable in installments up to 10 years. They're deferrable. For like sewer, the municipality can defer payment until somebody connects and then give them 10 years to pay. It's a lien on the property from the time of the special assessment is made. This is really an important financial tool for municipalities, and it would be really a shame if this was impaired. Now, a special charge typically is for a current service, like a repair. I think the statutes refer to tarring streets, snow removal. They are not payable in installments. They have to be paid at the end of the year. They're not a lien unless they're delinquent. And
can I just ask you a quick roundabout question? And
yes.
Maybe you can and maybe you can't answer it, but they seem to be going up all over the place. I mean, in Washington County, sometimes we have two or three in a row, and the community isn't always real excited about that. The people in the community are paying for all the roundabouts that are going up?
The state was one of the prime movers for doing roundabouts. They have convinced the counties about the value of roundabouts. And local government, I think, is just now starting to get on the roundabout.
But ultimately, the people are paying for all the
correct. And they found that they are efficient. They're not necessarily decreasing accidents, but the accidents that do happen are much less severe. There's the chance for personal injury is much less. And there's increasing public acceptance of them. And we've seen dramatic increase in the number of roundabouts. I think for the most part they might be a little bit more expensive to build initially, but like I said, there's some benefits, significant benefits.
To the public?
Yes.
Would you give us your best argument? Are you done, Justice?
Yes.
Would Thank you me. Give us your best argument on why this roundabout is not a general improvement?
Not a general improvement.
Yeah. In other words, what I want you to focus on, why is this just a local matter when you've got a state highway and a U.S. highway meeting?
Well, one thing I want to clarify, too, he says there's two state highways here. No, there's not.
There's not. It's a U.S. highway.
Right.
And
there's,
right.
Yeah.
But that's
Murdoch.
Right. Okay.
Why it's a local improvement.
Why is this local rather than a general?
Because it addresses a local problem of congestion that arises because of all the commercial establishments there. The congestion is essentially local, and it is a local solution to that traffic. on the improvements that were made, aside from the round thing itself, the sidewalks, the driveway aprons, utility connections, are all oriented towards a particular abutting property. These are a special benefit to those abutting properties, just like they've been considered by the courts like that for 70 years. There is an advantage to that, and there is a special advantage. I mean, like I said, you can't say that the community is primarily benefited by two new driveway aprons for a Taco Bell.
No, but I would imagine that two new driveway aprons don't take up the majority of what it costs to build this either. I would imagine the roundabout is where a large amount of money went.
This roundabout cost $4
million. Okay.
The city paid $1.5 million, and out of that $1.5 million, the city assessed only $300,000. So.
But in the project, it certainly was a big chunk of the project, certainly more than a driveway apron.
I didn't.
It certainly was a big chunk of the project, the roundabout, in cost. If it cost $4 million to build it, what was the entire project bill?
I can't tell you. I can't tell.
All right. Thank you.
I don't know.
Who paid the other $2.5 million?
If the state.
Okay.
And how did the city come to the determination that it would assess 300 some odd thousand of that?
Because they used a rule, they used an amount, a rate that they found for other reconstruction projects for commercial streets.
What rate is that, and where does it come from?
It was the average of reconstruction projects throughout other areas of the city without a roundabout. It wasn't a top-down. It was a bottom-up.
So if the state went to pay the $2.5 million, then your assessment would have been for $4 million?
Well, if the state wouldn't have paid $2.5 million, they wouldn't have done the project.
Right. How can the benefit conferred be dependent upon how much is funded by the state or federal government versus the local government?
Well, I think basically the philosophy was we've got to reconstruct this intersection anyway. And if the state's going to pay for a good portion of it, let's do it the way, well, first of all, the state would have a say. The city would have a say. I think in this particular instance, they probably had 2 years of hearings, multiple public hearings, training sessions about how to use a roundabout, and there was a significant amount of preparation and ultimately a reasonable amount of acceptance for this project.
Who would get the assessment? Who would get the money paid under the assessment?
Who would get it?
Yeah.
It would be the city.
The city. So the city would not assess for more than...
The city was far from made whole, right? They paid $1.5 million and they got $300,000 in assessments.
But it wouldn't assess for more than $1.5 million because it wouldn't get that back. Or it hadn't
paid
that.
It would come out of the general tax, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what do you want this court to do?
Pardon me?
Counsel, what do you want this court to do? It is I, Abraham.
I want you to recognize, appreciate how well special assessments work, that there is some confusion in some of the cases, and that is a little bit probably because of carelessness without distinguishing between a special
court's
assessment
carelessness.
On using the taxing power versus the police power.
Right. They have different
parameters. And the statement is always increases services or increases market value. And if you were doing something under the taxing power, increasing services wouldn't cut the mustard.
Thank you very much.
And I think that should be distinguished. And the other thing is that 3209, and it is that the planned improvement is making something available that wasn't available before, and that is what is increasing the market value of the property. It is a provision that is made for the benefit of the municipality that they can reduce their initial outlay for the cost of acquiring that property. And like I said, it's typically a result of service being available in areas that it hadn't been available before.
Thank you.
We don't have
much.
That situation here.
Thank you.
And my time is up.
Your time is up.
Hopefully,
yeah.
I assured you that.
Rebuttal, please.
Anyway, a couple things. First of all, there's no evidence. We had some discussion of old, tired streets, cracks in the slabs, that things were sinking. There are no evidentiary facts in the record to the effect of any of that.
I don't think there's any challenge to the city's right to do what they did, too, so that probably doesn't matter. Right?
It was the rationale given by opposing counsel. They have a right to do it, obviously. Mm-hmm. Second, there is a lack of clarity and consistency in the case law surrounding special assessments. With all due respect, it's hard to understand. That's why we have three very intelligent and highly trained Court of Appeals judges coming to three different conclusions. That's why we have Steinbach and Green Lake, where we have two of the top legal minds in our state saying slightly different things. It's confusing. A big part of the confusion is this caveat that in police power special assessments, there can either be an increase in market value or an increase in services. We did a lot of research that I think is convincing that the increase in services prong of that is a holdover from a previous version of the statutes.
So, Council, would you, Mr. Carlson said, that the special benefit here was the reduction of congestion that was caused by CED and the other surrounding businesses. Why is that not sufficient to support a special assessment?
Well, first of all, there's nothing in the record that would indicate that this congestion was caused by the surrounding businesses. That's speculation. We don't know if having the businesses there or not having the businesses there would change it one bit. What we do know is that the traffic lights, apparently just the fact of having people have to stop so people could go one way and the other, was causing it to take about 37 seconds to go through the intersection. And with the roundabout, it's down to about 10 and a half seconds, something like that. So there's a net saving of 26, 27 seconds for every car by having this new solution for the intersection. And as Attorney Carlson mentioned, the statewide and from a federal level, there's some thoughts that roundabouts, while they may have more crashes, there's less injury crashes and less fatalities. These are all great things. These are all good things. But they are general benefits for the traveling public. And I have nothing against special assessments. I think that special assessments can exist and should exist because a special assessment is like a forced giving by the public. It's where the public says, you, property owner, have gotten something very special out of this project, and by rights, by fairness, you should pay for it. It doesn't always, particularly under the police power, it doesn't always have to key exactly to the amount of the special benefit. That much is clear.
So, Council, Mr. Carlson also says that it is always the case that a municipality may special assess if it reconstructs a road that goes along a particular piece of property. Do you agree with that?
It certainly looks like they can always special charge for it. I don't think that they can always special assess for it because, first of all, reconstruction of a road, I think it's a real stretch to say that that's an increase in services. If you have the road there and it's re-blacktopped, I think it's hard to shove that into the increase in services. And the other prong is increased market value. Now, I think in most cases, if there was a worn-out road and it was rebuilt to a nice road, you would see an increase in market value. And quite frankly, in many, many real estate transactions, you see a situation where you say, well, there's a problem with this property of one type or another. The roof is worn out, for example. So the appraiser reduces the value of that property by $10,000 or whatever it would cost to put a new roof on it. So there is a measurable increase in market value, or decrease for that matter. The forensic appraisers, the certified general appraisers in the state of Wisconsin, are well trained to take into account the fact that if something is worn out and bad and needs to be replaced, or if that replacement is upcoming, that they can tease out the change in market value that accrues to them. We're not arguing that that's a proper thing to do. What we're saying is that in this case, to try to go, we have this problem. You can have an increase in market value or an increase in services. To say that a roundabout of this type is services of zero value as a way to go around the mandate 32.09 sub 3 doesn't work.
Thank you very much. Thank you both for an interesting case. I don't think that I've ever seen a case before where you had the condemnation statute pushed up against the special assessment statute. So it's a very interesting take. I enjoyed your briefs very much. You've never had it either, huh? No, I had not seen it before. Thank you very much for a good argument, and Justice Abrahamson will be out shortly for the students who choose to stay.